south of the border.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, not the version they give you in those glossy travel magazines, or the picture they paint for you in those international traveler websites, where they're only trying to sell you something. What's it really like for expats living in Latin America? Well, if you stick around a while, you'll find out. So, let's get started. She was a picture. I'd like to start off today with an email that I'd like to excerpt, and it starts out like this. Hi, Johnny. I've been listening to your shows for some months now, and they've been very informative for a wannabe expat like me. I live in Tampa, Florida, and I've just got to get out of here. And the moment is ripe for me. My lease is up in a month. I'm packing up and selling off everything I can because I don't want to store it or even have an obligation to return. And the time of my life is right, too. I'm 59, not quite retired, single, and my kid's in the military now, so I'm free to do as I please, barring economics, of course. Now, I've heard you many times say, don't go to Costa Rica. Well, guess where I'm going? Yes, it's Costa Rica. I've had that place on my mind for the last 6 years, and I just have to get it out of my system. I'll be staying for a little while near Puerto Viejo with my expat friend on the Caribbean side. And I'm told the Caribbean side is quite unlike the rest of Costa Rica, with mostly black Jamaican-style influence. More Europeans and less Americans, and the Americans that are there are kind of hippie types, as opposed to the yuppie types that you see in the rest of Costa Rica. And, well, after that, I guess I'll explore the rest of the Central Valley and see what I think, before I make any decision to put down roots in any one location. Well, there you have it, folks. Those are the kind of emails I get all the time. Despite my best advice, they still go to Costa Rica. And there's nothing wrong with Costa Rica if you got first world money, I always say that. And you don't mind being elbow to butthole with Americans all the time. I mean, after all, then you never have to learn Spanish, do you? And think of this for a second. In 1960, for those of you who were alive, 500,000, that's 500,000, American tourists visited Europe that year. That's 500,000. Now, did you know that last year, 2 million American tourists visited little Costa Rica, four times as many American tourists than visited all of Europe in 1960? And get this, the landmass in Europe is 200 times bigger than the landmass in Costa Rica. And that's why everywhere you look in Costa Rica, you see a gringo or two or 10. So if you're going to Costa Rica for the weather or the beaches, to enjoy all that with a bunch of gringos at first world prices, why don't you move to Tampa or Key West or Hawaii? And when our emailer says that he's moving to the Caribbean side of Costa Rica and that it's much different over there, well, he's right. It's about 90% black, very poor black over there. Like the Jamaican and the island blacks in the rest of the Caribbean. And since there's no industry and almost no real first world style tourism, there's not a lot of evidence of the flood of dollars like there is in the rest of Costa Rica. The gringos usually don't go there and stay overnight. They might come in for day trips once in a while. Because you see, on that side, there's almost no big four-star style luxury hotels and resorts like in the rest of Costa Rica. And why is that? That's because on that side of Costa Rica, you see a very poor subsistence kind of lifestyle with the locals. Like you see in the very poor areas of Jamaica and the Bahamas and places like that. And what you get to know when you live in Costa Rica is that crime is about 10 times higher on the Caribbean coast than it is in any other part of the country. In fact, the beaches are nicer on that side of the country because it is the Caribbean. But you're never advised to walk on those beaches alone and never at night, even in groups, because you're going to get robbed. In fact, every gringo that I've ever met that has stayed there more than a couple of weeks has been assaulted or robbed himself, or someone in his party had been assaulted or robbed. And when our email writer mentioned the fact that most people, the tourists that is, who live there are backpacker hippie types and not your middle class and higher yuppie style tourists like in the rest of Costa Rica, well, he's right about that, and there's a reason for it. That side of Costa Rica is very dirty, run down, and skanky. And there's such a gap between the locals that live there, the black ones, and the white Costa Ricans, or light-colored Costa Ricans, the Latinos and Ladinos, that it's just kind of depressing to hang around there. And since it's not booming like the rest of Costa Rica, and the government puts no money into it, they don't bother because it's no big tourist destination. And the fact that it's a highly racist society, which I mentioned in a previous show, the blacks, even though they saturate the Caribbean, don't have any voice in government. It's easy to go down there as a hippie type and a low-budget backpacker, a guy or gal with straggly hair and Jesus sandals. It's easy for them to go there, blend in, and hang out, since law enforcement is basically non-existent, and those scraggly, rasta-haired hippie types don't carry much of anything worth stealing, and they don't look like they've got two nickels to rub together anyway, so they're really not in too much danger of being rolled. So it's a free and easy place to hang out with if you're broke, or you look like you're broke. Because you see, those hippie types, they don't stay in $100-a-night hotels. They stay in $5 to $10-a-night flea bag joints. So I am warning you, if you go down there looking like your average American gringo with your camera and your leather shoulder bag, your L.L. Bean safari hat and those real Ray-Ban glasses, well, you're going to be a target. And your stuff won't last long, not if you hang out on the beach. And here's another thing. At night, they have a lot of low-rent bars and discos when all the locals go out to drink, party, and dance and have a good time, because that's what you do at night down there. But let me warn you, you don't want to go into some of those places. Because when you go in there, everybody scopes you out, believe me. You feel like all eyes are on you, and not in a good way. Not like in most of Latin America, where eyes are on you because you're a gringo, but it's a good thing. Because you got that gringo advantage going for you, and everybody loves a gringo. Well, guess what? There are places like in the Caribbean side of Costa Rica where everyone doesn't love a gringo. Not your average tourist type gringo anyway. Because you see, all the average tourist type gringos are in the rest of Costa Rica. They're not spreading their dollars and their gringo tourist wealth on the Caribbean side. Not much. Not much at all. And if you walk around, it shows. So the gringos aren't spending money there. The government's not spending money there. There's no jobs, which equates to resentment and high crime levels. And those crimes are petty crimes, so they never get solved. They'll steal your purse and your wallet and your shoes, but they're not going to beat you up and toss you over a pier. If you hang around in that area much, soon enough, things of yours will just start going missing one at a time. In fact, I remember expat Eddie telling me a story when he was staying at a small hotel out there in Limon. Limon, Costa Rica. That's the biggest town on the Caribbean side. Now, he was staying like in a $35 to $40 a night hotel, which is in Limon a pretty secure place. At least it should be. Anyway, Eddie stayed there for 3 days, and of course, you don't stay in your hotel room all day at all. You go out and do things, right? So Eddie was out doing things the first day, and at night he went out to eat and then to the bars. You know those discos where everybody's got their eyes on you? Well, Eddie can handle that okay. If he starts feeling negative vibes, he just starts buying drinks for everyone within spitting distance. And then after a while, everybody's your friend, right? Oh, and let me mention, on the Caribbean coast of Costa Rica, everybody speaks Spanish, of course, but most people speak English, which is actually a legacy of the sad past and the plantations and the United Fruit Company, all that. Anyway, most of the black natives over there can speak a Caribbean-style English, you know? So anyway, Eddie's in this open-air bar disco thing on the beach, and this black Rasta guy comes up to Eddie and asks him if he wants to buy some jewelry. And of course, Eddie didn't want to be impolite because, you know, you don't want to be impolite on their territory. So Eddie looked at what the guy had, but what most struck his eye was that this Rasta guy was wearing a Paul McCartney 1990 World Tour t-shirt. And it meant more to Eddie than just being a t-shirt like that, because Eddie had been to see that McCartney tour back in Detroit, and he had one just like it. In fact, it was Eddie's t-shirt, because Eddie recognized an unmistakable little rip on the sleeve and a chlorine stain on the shoulder. So how'd this guy get a hold of Eddie's shirt? Well, he got it from Eddie's hotel room, somehow. And you see, Eddie's one of those t-shirt guys. He loves t-shirts that have a message, especially rock and roll tour t-shirts like that. And you know, that could be a bad habit to have down here in Latin America, because Latins are nuts about t-shirts that have English wording on them, too. Anyway, Eddie's not the confrontational type, and he was outnumbered about 20 to 1. But he did ask the guy where he got the t-shirt, and the guy looked down at it, examined it a while, and said, "I went and saw the guy up in Detroit in concert, you know?" And then he thought a while and said, "I can let you have it for 25 bucks. It is an original, you know." Then Eddie said, "So you were at the McCartney concert, huh? Very cool, very cool. I go to a lot of concerts myself. Then you must be a big fan." "Well, so am I." And the guy said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm a really big fan, yeah." Then Eddie said, "You know, I'm a really huge fan, too. What McCartney song do you like the best?" Then he thought a while and he said, "All of them, man. I like all of them." Then Eddie said, "Me too, but you know which one I like the best? I like the old ones, you know, especially that one, Satisfaction. You know, I can't get no satisfaction." Then the Rasta guy looked at him, nodded, and said, "Yeah, I love that one too. It's one of his best." Now, Eddie's not easily riled, nor is he ever in a rush to do anything. So he had a couple more drinks before he went back to his hotel to check what else was missing. And to his dismay, two other of his prized rock and roll tour t-shirts were gone. And even though, you know, to you and me, t-shirts like that don't mean anything. You can get a Guns N' Roses, a Who, a Zeppelin, a Queen, or just about any rock and roll t-shirt you want for 10 or 15 bucks, can't you? But to Eddie, these t-shirts have sentimental value, believe me. I mean, we all have our prized possessions that are practically worthless in the eyes of others now, don't we? So the next night, Eddie went back to the same bar. He runs into the same guy wearing the same T-shirt. He says, look, I don't need any jewelry, but you have any T-shirts like the one you got on right there? And the guy says, yeah, sure. You tell me what you want, I got it. And Eddie says, you know, I'm rather fond of Jimi Hendrix and Pink Floyd. Now, you wouldn't happen to have a couple of T-shirts for sale like that now, would you? Then the guy said, yeah, Jimi Hendrix. I got Jimi Hendrix. But that Pink Floyd guy, who's he? And Eddie said, well, he's not a guy, but the T-shirt has a big transparent pyramid with the colors of the rainbow running through it. And the guy thought a second, snapped his fingers, and said, yeah, I got one of those. And Eddie said, all right, give me a price for those and the one you're wearing, too. And the guy came back in a half an hour, and they did the deal. Eddie paid $30 and got his T-shirts back. So I'm telling you guys out there, that's what's in store if you hang around the Caribbean side of Costa Rica. And ladies, let me warn you, you're really in for a time if you hang around in Limon or parts nearby. Because the problem is, nearly every one of these local guys thinks himself to be a Romeo. And they believe, yes, they really believe, that white girls from the first world love those laid-back black Rasta man types with all those muscles. And yeah, a lot of these guys do have muscles. Because they hang around the beach in the hot sun, they're doing a lot of walking and swimming, so they're sweating off excess calories that would just make us first worlders fat. And they're super proud of their muscles and their bodies because they haven't gotten much else. I mean, they don't have money or any of the other creature comforts that generally impress shallow people, like a nice car. So a lot of these guys keep themselves lean, mean, and looking good. And I've heard how these guys talk to the ladies. It's all smooth and sexy and a totally contrived fake act and a put-on. But a lot of first world women fall for that because they're alone and on vacation and sometimes just want to have a cross-cultural fling. So the rumors are everywhere that first world girls want to hook up with these guys. Even if only a small percentage do, the rumors run wild. And here's the thing, these guys believe that every unattached first world girl that bothers to come to Limon or the Caribbean side of Costa Rica is looking to hook up with a local Rasta guy. I mean, it's an ugly, dirty place, and why else would they come? And that's on the mind of practically every one of these guys, and they're pretty vocal about it. So, ladies, be forewarned. If you come down to that side of Costa Rica, unless you're with a guy, you're going to get hit on every second of the day. And a lot of these guys just won't let up. They'll follow you down the street, make little comments to you, show up at places that you're at unexpectedly, just so they can run into you and make their pitch again. Because, you see, these guys think, and I've been told this many times, that first world girls want to hook up with you, but they play hard to get. They think when a girl says no, she really doesn't mean it. She wants to play the game too. And as a guy keeps at it, he keeps wearing her down, finally they'll give in to your advances. They think that's part of the game. And it seems like every single local guy under 50 plays it that way. Just giving you a heads up on that, ladies. And here's another thing, guys, this is for you. Those black girls in those mostly black towns on the Caribbean side, not just Costa Rica, all the way up Honduras and Nicaragua, you name it, Belize, Panama. On the Caribbean coastal side where there are huge black populations, they really don't see many gringos at all. Because 98% of that coastal area is off the tourist trail. Until you get up into Mexico, that is. And guys, I'm telling you, you go into one of these bars I'm talking about, or discos, and you can be sure all eyes are going to be on you. And there'll be a lot of ladies in there that'll give you that certain look, if you know what I mean. And if you give them that little look of interest back, sometimes they'll come walking right up to you, because you know most of them on the Caribbean side speak English too. So all of a sudden, you're in a bar or a disco, and you suddenly realize you're more popular with the ladies than you ever were up in the first world. And that's of course because you've got that gringo advantage going for you. That extra 2 or 3 points added to your score that I talk about all the time. That's when you're off the tourist track, of course. Anyway, because these girls seem to have an eye for the gringos, that just might get you into trouble. Because many times they'll talk to you, even if they've got a boyfriend hanging around somewhere. And man, these guys can get jealous. And you haven't seen jealous until you've been down here in Latin America. So if you're in a bar or a disco, especially on the Caribbean side, you have to be extra careful about who you pay attention to. And like Eddie says, many times it won't even be your fault. A girl will come walking over and comment on how beautiful your blue or green eyes are, and you did nothing to encourage it. Well, you can imagine how that goes down if there's a couple of local guys standing around. They think you're out to steal their women, even though their women prefer you to them, which is, again, one part of the gringo advantage. So there's a big double standard going on, as you can see. The local guys want to pick up a gringa, and by the way, to have a gringa girlfriend is a big feather in a guy's hat down here. And at the same time, the guys down here get really ticked off if one of their local girls takes a shine to you. So you're between a rock and a hard place on that one. And of course, I'm talking about the towns on the Caribbean coast. But when you go more inland, where there's almost no blacks and mostly Latinos and Latinas, things in that department change a bit. Because first of all, the Latinos are a bit more humble and reserved. When you're in an all-Latin bar and disco, the ladies will never come right up and talk to gringos as much as they'd like to, unless you do it first. They're just more humble and reserved. And of course, 98% of them don't speak enough English to have a conversation, so they almost never try, unless you do it first. And then they're always glad to talk to you. You almost never get the cold shoulder from them. And the same thing with Latin guys. If they see a gringa or two in the bar or the disco, they're not going to come over and pester you. They'll ask you to dance because that's what you do in a disco, right? But they're not pushy and persistent like you see with the guys on the coast. And maybe that pushy persistence you see with those Caribbean guys is that they don't have that big language obstacle to get over. They speak English. Anyway, those are just a few sociological observations to keep under your hat the next time you come down or if you're just thinking about it. And you know, referencing back to that email where the writer says he's going to Costa Rica anyway, no matter what he's heard about it, because he wants to see what it's like. Well, I want to tell you that I get an awful lot of emails from people asking me, in my experience, which country do I think is going to be the next Costa Rica? If it's going to be Panama, Ecuador, Brazil, Uruguay. Those are usually the top four countries that come up. And people who send me those emails are thinking, wow, if I only knew the answer to that question and Johnny could give it to me, they could get in on the ground floor and clean right up. They could get into that next country like people got in Costa Rica in the 90s. They could buy in cheap and just wait for that boom and clean up. That sounds awful simple, right? But really, just what did happen to Costa Rica to make it take off like it did? Then it would be easy to analyze which country or countries will be next. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a step-by-step procedure that you can track so you can predict yourself which country or countries are going to be the next Costa Rica. And here's how it goes. Listen closely. First, some adventurous gringos have to discover the place. They're the pioneers, and they'll keep coming back because it's beautiful and cheap. But it'll be a bit rough, and the infrastructure will be a little crappy, and the airport, well, that'll be just like out of the 50s. Then after a while, these adventurous gringos, when they go back home after their vacations, they'll show their friends slides and movies and pictures and tell them how beautiful and cheap it is and that there's almost no gringos around to spoil it. Then the second wave of gringos will come, the friends of the adventurers. And that's when the trickle becomes a flow and the hordes will come because friends will tell friends will tell friends. And then the travel agencies will get in on the act and start putting together cheap package deals and charter flights. And then the country will need a bigger airport. And all the while, gringo dollars are flooding the place. And soon enough, locals who never had U.S. dollars in their hands before will start preferring the U.S. dollar to their own colorful local funny money. And while the dollar takes over, inflation takes off and prices on basic things soar. And the hordes of gringos coming down want to live like first world gringos, so they suck up all the good apartments and house rentals. And naturally, prices on rentals soar. And of course, gringos, being gringos, want air conditioning, garbage disposals, BMWs, and other first world amenities that they don't have in their little adopted country, so prices on imported items soar. And soon many of the gringos have been coming down. Time after time, year after year, they don't want to rent anymore. They want to buy a house or a condo because they have plans on retiring in the future. Now they want first world housing, condos, and subdivisions. So naturally the price of real estate skyrockets too. Well, those gringos who are buying places down there, now they want big shopping malls, country clubs, golf courses, and stuff. So the price of outlying land skyrockets, as well as raw farmland. And then the speculators move in and buy up big tracts of land. Meanwhile, the locals are watching all this happen. They see how the gringos throw their dough around, tipping $5 and $10 for a small thing like a cab ride, which is a day's wages for the agricultural and unskilled worker. And soon the common man won't work for 5 or even 10 times the normal minimum wage. And everyone wants to work for a gringo or a gringo enterprise because then they can get dollar tips from extravagant gringos on vacation who tip like crazy because they are on vacation and don't care, as opposed to locals on vacation who don't tip much at all, and of course neither do backpackers or Germans. Anyway, while all that's going on, the government sees that it has to improve the infrastructure because gringos are demanding it. Better roads, better airports, more stable electric grid, bigger and better port facilities to bring in those containers of flat-screen TVs, BMWs, and Range Rovers. And to pay for that, they have to raise taxes. So the first thing they do is slap a big hotel and service industry tax so the tourists can pick up the slack. And sometimes there'll even be 2 taxes on hospitality items, which is never enough, especially since the bureaucracy itself is growing by leaps and bounds. And then the government eyes the next big source of revenue, property taxes, which they increase steadily from year to year. And who does that affect most? Gringos, of course, because they buy expensive properties. While the average local Latin person's house might be valued at $20,000 to $35,000, a gringo, on the other hand, can't buy a decent townhouse for under $150,000, and he's taxed accordingly. Meanwhile, sophisticated, slick lawyers and con men have figured out 101 ways on how to rip off starry-eyed gringos, because you see, a tenderfoot gringo is ripe for the picking. You're not on your own turf at all, so when you get to paradise, you want a piece of it so badly that slick locals oblige. And since you don't speak and definitely can't read Spanish, you'll never be able to make head or tail of the forms and contracts they'll stick in front of you to sign. So as nearly all locals learn English to get tourism jobs that pay in dollars, the poorer Latins from adjacent countries arrive to do the crap jobs that the nationals will no longer take, believing now that menial jobs like housekeeping and gardening are beneath them. Sound familiar? Then it doesn't take long for locals in that dollar-saturated country to cop a superior attitude to their poorer Latin neighbors and start blaming uneducated Latin immigrants for all their country's ills, the poorer ones that they let in to do all those crappy jobs in the first place. They blame Latin immigrants for overtaxing their healthcare system, their educational system, and for all the crime statistics. Everything gets blamed on poor Latins from adjacent countries. That sounds familiar too, doesn't it? So when all those things are mixed together, a few years down the road, real estate prices become first world, and so does everything else. So that, in a nutshell, is how Costa Rica became Costa Rica. So folks, if you take all that basic stuff into consideration, it would be easy to track a country and see how it's doing. See if it's going to be the next Costa Rica. Looks like Panama's got a head start now, doesn't it? It's about half to three-quarters of the way there already. But to tell you the truth, I just can't see why in the world anyone would want to live in a country that's pegged to be the next Costa Rica anyway. Sure, I'd love to be in a country that was like Costa Rica in the early 80s or 90s, when people weren't jaded and things were laid back, where you could walk all day and barely see a gringo, land, housing, food, and everything else was dirt cheap, and you get treated like a visiting dignitary 24/7, because you are a rare commodity and everybody loves a gringo. It's that gringo advantage I talk about, which has all but disappeared now in Costa Rica. And it turns out almost every long-term expat I know feels the same way. We want to live, work, play, and or retire in a Latin country that's still virtually in the 1980s and 90s. We don't want to live in a country like Costa Rica that's so in the limelight and overrun by gringos, because unfortunately in the end they end up turning every sleepy, backwater Latin American country into a tropical Disneyland with first world prices and jaded locals. So yes, it looks like there are a few Latin countries that are gonna turn into the next Costa Ricas. And as for what that means to me, that just means it's a good place to buy a good cheap piece of land today and hightail it right back to another Latin country that you know is off the gringo trail and wait for about 20 years and sell your land for a fortune. To me, that would be the only reason I'd consider investing in any country that was on the fast track to becoming another Costa Rica. In other words, buy some land, get out, and let the rest of the first world and their dollars move in. Enough said about that. Now I'd like to get to another kind of email that I get quite often. It says, "Dear Johnny, the news media makes it sound to me like Mexico's drug problems are spilling into the other countries in Central America. You know, the gangbangers sent from our prisons back to Guatemala, Honduras, Salvador, etc., etc." Then he asks, "Is it a countryside sort of thing? Do they kidnap gringos or what? What's your take on this?" And that comes from David. Well, David, let me just report that I have very good news about this. First of all, everything you hear in the media about Mexico is true. Don't go there. And definitely don't drive there. You don't want to jump from the frying pan into the fire. And it's true that they do deport a lot of these gang members back down to the Central American countries that they came from. But you see, us gringo expats know that when these characters get deported back to their home countries, they almost always, inevitably, try to get back into the States again. And they almost always do, because everything's bigger, better, grander, and richer in the States than the crappy little barrio that they came from in Salvador, Guatemala, or Honduras, or wherever. Being a gangbanger in the first world, in the States, is 100 times better than being a gangbanger down here. It's like baseball. Like being sent down from the majors to a farm team. What a letdown. And here's the other thing. Expats, especially long-term expats, we never go near the places those guys live and hang out. We know exactly the places that are safe and the places to keep away from in our chosen Latin American areas. For example, let's take Guatemala City. It's got 25 zones or districts. And there are about 6 or 7 of those zones that I'll never go in. I just never will. I don't have to and I don't want to. And there's about 5 or 6 of those zones that are so safe you can go there day and night, walk alone, and hang out till 3 in the morning if you want. Then there are 6 or 7 zones that are absolutely fine during the day. If you're alone walking around, no problem, but you just don't want to hang around at night. Could be iffy. And of course, an expat learns those things pretty early on just by asking around, talking to friends and acquaintances, and even checking out TV and the newspapers, because you'll see every day people get murdered in big cities. Just like they do in the first world, New York, Detroit, Chicago, Miami, murders every day, right? Shootings, robberies, drug deals gone wrong and all of that? Well, guess what? All you have to do is pick up a paper down here, flip through the first 3 or 4 pages, and if you're in Guatemala City, for example, note the zones that all of those shootings and crimes happen in. You'll soon notice a pattern. There'll be 5 or 6 zones that all the crimes seem to happen in. 98% of the stuff in these 5 or 6 zones. You're starting to see where I'm coming from here? You don't go to those zones. That's where the bad boys live. And they're always stealing from each other and shooting themselves up, which in the end might be a good thing. And there's no need to ever go there, believe me. But you know, the first world media paints all of Central America with the same tar brush, which turns out to be very good for us expats. That keeps all but the most adventurous gringos back in Cleveland. They don't come down here unless they're on the gringo tourist trail like Costa Rica, Cancun, or Panama. And about kidnapping gringos? Well, I'll tell you what, if you're wearing a bunch of high fashion jewelry, a Rolex, carrying a laptop, and have a Range Rover, and you like to show off your wealth, well, you won't get kidnapped. But the bad guys might keep an eye out for your kid with her pink BlackBerry and her fashionable little Mini Cooper, the one that you bought for her on her 16th birthday, because you see, down here they don't much kidnap gringos at all. Gringo expats, especially long-term expats, know better than to have a high profile. They're seen around town dressed completely normal, and they blend right in. But you know who does get kidnapped on occasion? Kids of rich, pompous Latins who like to show their wealth off to everyone. So I have no sympathy for those people when that does happen. You get the point. And by the way, my seminar is on, the dates have been selected, June 26th, 27th, and 28th. There are only 24 available places, no more, so you better hurry and sign up. Just go to the seminar website, which is www.expatwisdom.com, www.expatwisdom.com. Oh, and by the way, when expat Eddie checked out of his hotel in Limon, Costa Rica, the desk clerk was wearing Ray-Ban glasses, the very ones that Eddie thought he'd misplaced. But the joke was on the desk clerk because Eddie only paid $3 for them. They were fake.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.